Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as StarsCast. I was talking to my eye doctor today and telling him about the name StarsCast, and he said, well, where did that come from? We had this long conversation, and he couldn't believe how all of this came to be for me. But that's enough about me. I want to talk about a little bit about the magazine. MysticLivingToday.com is up. Another great one, new people that have submitted to me, and you know I'm always on a high when I do that. I mean, I had some articles come to me on the second of the month, and I still put them in because I love it. Everybody knows that. So about the 20th of the month, I will be sending out reminders. I mean, I've got 10 people here, I'm looking at this list, who want to submit to the magazine or want to be on my radio show. I was telling my eye doctor that. He said, well, how do you do that? I said, I don't know. I said, it's called divine order. He said, and I had explained to him about divine order. So, because he really, you know, I mean, I don't know what faith he is, but some people don't even know what that is. You know, it's just divine intervention. You could call it synchronicities, but to me it's divine order. Also want to remind you about stars with a Z, psychics.com. First 3 minutes are free if you're brand new and you create an account. All you have to do is verify and then let me know. I'll see the account has been opened and you get 3 free minutes. Other than that, I'm going to go get right started with my beautiful guest. I mean, and she is. And hello, beautiful Darlene. How are you?
Oh, I'm blessed, thank you. How are you doing, beautiful Natalie?
I'm great. I'm really great. I want to start, she's an author, by the way. Darlene is an author. I want to start at the beginning about how did you get interested in writing at all? I mean, really.
Well, it's a funny story about that. When I was a little girl, I loved to tell stories, and especially my two little cousins. They were younger than me, and I used to love to tell them stories. And I would tell stories. And so one day, when I was about 7, my mother asked me, what do you want to be when you grow up? And before I can answer, my sister said, the biggest liar that ever lived. So,
how cute is that? The biggest liar.
Yeah, and she, what happened was when I was in the 6th grade, we had to write a story about a haunted house. And, of course, I start writing it by introducing the characters in a certain way, like I would do in my novel, you know, just let them pop up and introduce them and stuff. And my 6th grade teacher decided to use my story for an example. And all through there, from 6th grade through high school, my teachers started using my writings as an example. Of course, at the time, I was super embarrassed. I mean, it was quite a beautiful thing for them to do that for me. But yeah, as embarrassing, you know, like I even wrote a thing. I was starving one day, and we had to write a description. Essay in English, and I wrote about a cheeseburger and milkshake because I was so hungry. And that was used. And next thing I knew, half the class, I was working at this little place called the Gay 90s in El Segundo, where I went to high school. And it was an ice cream shop. What we sold, like sandwiches and stuff like that, and hot dogs and burgers. And like I said, I knew half my class was sitting at my counter looking for me to buy, you know, sell them food. And so, can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? You know, but I was in college to go. I went after my botany degree, and while I was in my back core classes, the ones that you really don't, I was in my English classes. Teachers actually encouraged me to, my major to English. No good in math. My son still laughs at me. I was so mindful going through algebra, and I'm going, okay, 85 minus zero, and I put it on my calculator, and my son says, Mom, you take nothing from 85, it's zero. So, but I knew that, but I didn't at the time. I wasn't thinking straight. But so I changed my major to English, and with a writing minor in the concentration of fiction. That's where it started.
Wow. So you were the little writer when you were a little girl. This is amazing.
Yes.
But you know what? I'm going to tell you something. Darlene, that almost, I have to say probably 99.9 of the people that I've had on my show either wrote little stories when they were really young or poetry. And
wow.
And that's the truth. I mean, if we had to do a survey, I could tell you that's how high the percentage is of people that I, because I ask everybody. And a lot of them had parents that were highly educated, like they were graduates of college or that kind of thing, but not all of them. Most of them, I'd have to say, started writing, you know?
Wow.
Isn't that something? And I ask everybody that because I should be keeping track because it's really amazing. I mean, people are listening thinking, oh, so for everybody out there, you see, this is how she got started. She just didn't waltz in and take pen and paper and start writing a book. You know, she started way long ago when she was young, really young. I mean, not that you're old, but really young, a young girl. And you wanted to work at NASA, huh?
Oh, my gosh. My goodness. I wanted to be an astronaut. But when I went to high school, my counselor and my mother was with me when I started high school to pick out my classes because they required a parent to be with you when you first went in. And when my counselor asked me, he goes, what would you like to be? I said, an astronaut. And they both laughed because I was a woman.
Right.
And girls don't become astronauts. And I was told that I had to be an accountant like my mother. Numbers again.
Yeah.
And so, but I hated every minute of it. My bookkeeping teacher, he was hysterical with me because he put the answer on a board for a quiz, and I saw the answer, and I still got it wrong, got the quiz wrong. All I had to do was find our way to it.
Or they wanted you to show your work. I mean, you could come up with the answer, but they wanted to see the work. Well, geez, I mean, do I have to go through all these? I know the answer from in my head. That's what I used to do. You know, that takes too much time to show all the work, right?
Yeah. Well, see, division was good for me at that when I was young, when I was a kid. I remember pre-algebra, my teacher wrote a thing on the board, and it had a lot of division in it, and he put down the wrong answer. Because I can look at something when I was young. Well, I could still do it somewhat, but not like I used to. But I would look at it, and I said to him, you got your problem wrong, your answer wrong. And he goes, oh, really? He says, why don't you come up and show us, Miss Varanus? Because that was my maiden name, Varanus.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. And I did it, and oh, my gosh, he couldn't believe it. He just sat there laughing. I was in eighth grade, and I was able to do that. But when it got to the real serious stuff in math, forget about it. you know, my kids are whizzes in math, but I'm not. So
yeah,
my grandson
is, my son is a whiz too. So, you know, I guess maybe we passed it along. I mean, grade school was okay. You know, I'll tell you what I was good at. Listen to this. It's going to be weird. And I've told this story before. You know, you learn how to do handwriting. You know, you have the paper that's got the split lines and the caps have to be all the way up and the small lowercase has to be half. Okay, well, here we are. I don't even know what grade it was. I was pretty young, and we were in a portable. And I'm writing away, right? Teacher comes over, and she says, now, you're doing this wrong. And I kind of looked at her, and I said, why? She said, well, you're not following what I've got up on the board and nor what's in front of you in your book. And I said, well, I don't like the way that looks. she said, well, I want you to try this. Just do this. She said, she didn't say humor me, but basically that's what she was saying to me. So we go on, and, you know, a couple days later, back to the handwriting, she comes back to me again. And she said, you know, I was talking to my husband, and I've made a decision about you. So what, she's going to boot me out? She said, you know what? Really and truly, your handwriting is beautiful. She said, I'm going to just let you write the way you want to write. But she kind of whispered it to me. She didn't want the whole class to know.
Right.
And from that point on, my handwriting has always been beautiful. So there was my creativity, I guess. I mean, you know, I loved to make the big first letter, and I had a lot of flair with the letters. And because of her, and she married a Greek man. Her name was Mrs. Horsch, and she married a man named Dopoulos. Well, when she became Dopoulos over the weekend, we thought, what happened? She changed her name? We didn't know. We didn't put two and two together, right? So.
Right.
We ended up getting, there were three of us who were really close to her, especially me because of the handwriting thing. And we would be invited to her home, and we met her husband, and it was the neatest thing. But I will never forget what she did for me because it encouraged me somehow. I mean, that's the only thing that I can really do. I mean, I can talk, yeah, but, you know, as far as a knack for something. Yeah, I can talk. And I love to read. I love to read out loud. And my granddaughter, who is 17, is coming over this week. She has Graham, she calls me. I have to read this book. She had to read the book Help, you know, the movie Help, same thing. And she had to read one of these other books. Yeah, and she said to me, I said, well, what are you struggling with? You know, I don't like to read. And I said, it's a necessity in life. And knowledge is power. Yeah. What do you mean? And I have to explain it to her. The more you know, the more you know. And I said, and it'll get you further ahead. She said, I like that. So she's going to come over and she says, I want you to read to me. I'm going to read to my 17-year-old granddaughter. But I'll tell you something. I love it. She loves how I read. You know what it is that there's some kind of dialogue. Sometimes I'll fool with it and I'll change the names and make her laugh. But it's just, I can go up with it or down with it. It's not this like monotone, like, you know, it's the same sound that I'm putting, which is boring when you, and I never read a book like that. Never, ever. So I have that. Yeah. Is that something? Weird, strange things.
Something. my 17-year-old granddaughter read my novel.
Oh.
And she's my biggest fan. She is my biggest fan.
Of course.
She loves to read. She wants to be a librarian. She really loves. Yes, she wants to be a librarian. She's going to go in the Navy first for 4 years. And when she comes out, she wants to get a job as a librarian. So she wants to be trained in the Navy about it, but her problem is that she actually wants to be in a ship and sail the world. So I understand.
So that's how she's going to get to travel, right?
Yes, that's how she's going to get to travel. So, but she's, my biggest fan on this novel. What she did catch, though, my grandson, who is 19 now, they're 2 years and 2 days apart. And she saw that I put some of them in Maggie. She caught it. She says, Granny, I could see you caught, you put some of me and Darren in there.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So, and she
okay,
started laughing.
I should tell everybody what your name is. It's Darlene West. I just said beautiful Darlene. I mean, we're like old friends now, you know, when I don't even bother to give your last name. But anyway, you are the author. You don't have a last name to me. You're the author of a book called Awakened by Grace. Now, oftentimes I write when I do things like on Instagram, and I'll say, do everything under grace. I don't know where that came from. Yeah, that's what I do everything under grace. And I have no idea where that came from. I had a lady that used to co-host my show. She said, well, where'd you get that at? I said, I don't know. It just came out of my head. Okay, so tell us about Awakened by Grace. I mean, I've got the little points here, but I want to hear it from you. I want to, because when the author talks about her book or his book, it always seems to make more sense. I mean, they always seem to be able to spell it out so that everybody can understand. And you should be the one to tell the story, really.
Well, I was touched. My heart was touched years ago, throughout the years, by people who, when I was street evangelizing and when I used to go to mental hospitals and minister to people in the mental hospital, people have self-condemnation or they're guilty about something that they had done. And they didn't think they were good enough for God. And even Christians, like non-Christians, both people who don't even know the Lord and people who know the Lord, very depressed over chronic grief. A lot of the people went into the mental hospitals because of depression, not because they were crazy, just because they checked themselves in because of depression, because they thought they weren't good enough. They were told, I guess, all their life, you'll never make anything yourself. You're no good. There was names, horrific names that people were called by their parents. And when I was in college, actually, way back then, God was speaking to my heart about these people that I had met, and then because I went to college later on in life, I went to college when I was an older than average student, and so I kept hearing the name Franklin, Dr. Professor Franklin Franklin. So 4 years ago now, when I sat down to write the novel, all those people's faces and their stories and stuff was just coming up from inside my heart.
Mm.
And that's how I just, you know, created Franklin to have a very chronic, what happened to him was horrible. Here he is married to a woman for he knew her since he was 5 years old. He was 5 years old. The only woman he ever kissed, and he blames himself for a tragic accident that takes her life. And the chronic grief is there, along with the guilt, along with the self-condemnation, because he's already insecure because of his father. But he is a family man. He had a daughter and a granddaughter. And his granddaughter was 6 years old when his wife was killed in the car accident.
Which would be devastating.
He loved her. Yes, which was devastating. It was devastating for the whole family. And her brother, his wife's brother, best friend too, because they were twins, the brother and sister, so they all grew up together, all three of them. And he pushes everybody away, even his granddaughter. But his granddaughter was his princess. And her name is Maggie. And then shortly after the anniversary of his wife's death, his granddaughter comes and interrupts at 8 years old. His daughter brings his granddaughter, her daughter, which is his granddaughter, to him for him to keep her for 5 days. And this was all unexpected. And in this 5 days, is life-changing for Franklin. This whole family have Christ in their hearts except for him. He was a bit of an elitist because he was a professor. Actually, he was angry at God for what God did not answer for him when he was a kid. And so, but his wife became saved after they were married, and his daughter was saved, and his granddaughter saved, and his daughter and her husband went to Bible college. And they were done, and they went for a job interview, and they leave Maggie with him. And Maggie's faith-filled answered prayers manifest before Franklin's eyes, but he still has problems with this. But Maggie also encourages new people to become part of his life. And in spite of all that he witnesses and all these people he's meeting, he still believes that he cannot move on in his life without Kennedy, his wife. So that's basically, I don't want to, you know, give the whole story away, but
no.
I wanted to tell people what, you know, to see how, I could have brought another woman in his life, you know, most stories
sure.
do that. But I didn't want a romance. I want people to have a romance with Christ. I want people to see it with God. I mean, you could bring somebody, you know, God could bring somebody in your life, and that's your person that God brought to you to help you heal, but people would look at that person in the story and think that's what happened. I want them to know what God did and God's love. That's what I'm trying to portray, is God's love and his goodness and his grace.
Well, you know, I want to tell you a little something what happened to me. We talked about this. You're gonna love it. I mean, I'm very spiritual. I believe, in capital letters, believe. That's it. That's me. And I, when I was about 32, I almost died. I got a virus, probably as bad or maybe worse than what's going on now. It affected my whole body, not just the lungs.
Wow.
Yeah, well, and the thing of it is they never could figure out how I got this. A man in the area had the same thing happen to him.
Yeah.
So we figured maybe it was a restaurant with a glass. I wasn't drinking with a straw. I drank out of the glass. I never go without using a straw unless it's a glass of wine. And then I try to look and make sure that it's immaculate. I mean, I do my best. Anyways, So I had bed rest. The doctor wanted to put me in the hospital, and I said, no, I'll be okay. I had to go in every day for vitamin B12 shots and gamma globulin because they had to bring up my immunities because there wasn't anything else they could do for me. I was susceptible to everything out there. I couldn't leave the house. I had to stay home. So every day I went in to get my injections. And one night I woke up, and my room was glowing a golden yellow color. Now, you know, I knew a lot of psychics around me. I had a lot of them, and they said, oh, that was to heal you. And I said, oh, it might have been. But I said, it's got something to do with something else. I had to see it. So, you know, I looked around. Were the light on? No, nothing was lit that I had done. I turned around and looked on my back wall, darling, and there was a crystal about 7 feet high, total. From bottom to top, that's where the glow was coming from. Now that's just one thing that happened to me. I mean, of course, I recovered. It really didn't get me on a spiritual path. It didn't really, but there was a purpose for it, and I knew it, and I still see it to this day. Then, you know, my husband had Alzheimer's. But he had the kind that he became very mean. I mean, he was Italian, and he had this bossiness to him anyhow. But so sometimes when you get Alzheimer's, you go one way or the other. You either are really sweet or you're really mean. Well, he went the mean way. And, you know, I cried every day. I kept him home. He tried to kill me every day. I mean, he would throw
wow.
me, he would throw things at me. I mean, but anyways, that's past. I just want to lead you up to this. So I'm in the bathroom. I had closed the door and locked it. And I sat on the floor, and I was just sobbing, Darlene, because I had been going through this for months and months. And I just kept thinking, how much longer do I have to do this? Well, I looked on the floor of my bathroom, and I saw a pair of feet. No shoes, just feet. And right above the ankles was a white cloth, white robe, right? Well,
an angel.
I thought to myself, well, either that or it was Jesus, was one of the two. As soon as I recognized it, I mean, the same thing with this thing that was glowing in my room. As soon as I believed it, I was put back to sleep. You would have thought I would have stayed up all night and watched it, but I didn't. No. So this entity that came into my bathroom, as soon as I saw that, it was like somebody snapped their fingers. I got up. I stopped crying. I was good to go. And I never had that happen to me again, to where I was so desperate because nobody was around. Everybody was working in my neighborhood. My son, my daughter-in-law, they were working. You know, you can't have somebody babysit with you.
Right.
And that was the only time. And then Jesus came to me in a dream. I'm in a car. I look out the window, and he's standing there. I look down at the floor, same bare feet now, just bare feet, mm-hmm. these old raggedy clothes, like a cord around his waist. But I didn't recognize him, see? And he looked at me, and he pointed to behind me. So I had to look behind the vehicle I was in. I was on the driver's side. And here comes all the apostles. And I look back at him, and mentally he said to me, "Now do you believe me?"
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And he touched my hand.
Praise
the Lord.
Joke.
And, you know, so I tell this story. It's not just a story. I tell what happened to me because I want people to believe that there is something that you can pray to. There is someone that you can pray to. You can pray to Jesus, to God, to all the archangels, all the angels. But you have to believe. You know, Darlene, it has to come from within, right? It has to come
right.
from within. You can't be forced to believe anything. You just can't. You just can't. And I wanted to share that with you because of your background, and I knew that you would appreciate it very, very much.
Well, you know,
now,
the yellow glowing light. Now, I had one experience with the yellow glowing light. And this was years and years ago, way before I even met my husband. Do you remember the tax criminal Lois Lerner?
Yeah.
I almost married her brother.
Oh.
His name was Joe. And what happened was they were apolitical at the time, the family was. But what happened was he, at 29, he died of an aneurysm stroke. And I was really out of my mind about it. And one night I was crying and I saw this yellow glow light shine come into my window. There was nothing out there. It was dark. It was black outside. And the yellow glow light just shined in my window. Well, that night when I went to bed, I believe God gave me a dream of me going to heaven. And I saw Joe there. And he says, "Darlene, I'm all right." And from that time on, I was able to move on in my life. It was just a wonderful, wonderful experience walking in heaven. And I didn't want to leave at first, you know. I mean, I don't want to go, but, you know, I had to leave. And so God sent me back. But that was something that I'll never forget. So that yellow glow light, I've seen it too. and it was so magnificent. It was almost like a golden. It was so, it was yellow, but it was almost golden.
Yeah,
and
that's what it was.
I just,
but mine was coming from a crystal. So yours came through
mine
the window,
right? Mine was coming from the window. Yeah, mine came through the window. And it was dark outside, and I was sitting in my chair, and it was a small window. And it just came right through that window. The whole window lit up. And, that light I've seen, too.
Well, it's, I mean, like, for people like us, it's very, very meaningful. It really, really is. You know, it's, you know, now people are listening and say, well, you know, it doesn't happen to everybody. I think it happens, first of all, I'm going back to this, you have to believe. So what brings it to you, whatever it is, knows that once he or she sees this, they're going to know. This is not a game.
Right.
Nobody had a light from a light shining in your window, and nobody put a light on my wall. So, but, you know, people say, well, how come it doesn't happen to me? Again, if you have all these doubts, I mean, I know what happened to me, you know, and I almost died. There's just, you know, there was nothing anybody could do. They couldn't, the doctor told me 2 years later, he said, we were worried. We didn't know what to do with you. Oh, well, good. I didn't ever told him that, but I did tell my son and my husband, my late husband, and I said, you know, I don't know if they believed me or not. It didn't matter. I believed it. I knew. Now, you're an evangelist. What does that, I want you to explain to people what that means and what that is.
Well, evangelizing, you're not a preacher, but you go out in the street and God to you and you minister Christ to them. Many of them walk away and don't want anything to do with God, but there are others that come to you. For an example, I was done street evangelizing one day, and I was living in Connecticut at the time, and I was driving through Hartford. That's where I was ministering at, and I was going home. And there was a prostitute on the corner of the street, and there were a group of men across, kitty-cornered across the street from her. And they were, she was giving them obscene gestures, and they were shouting out to her. She was from Puerto Rico, and they were all speaking in Spanish. But I do know some Spanish. So the language was really awful. So God says, stop right now and talk to her. So I stopped the car. And God says, pray in the spirit as loud as you can. And I start praying in the spirit, and she's looking at me, but the men ran away. Then I went to her, and she fell in my arms crying. She wanted to go back to church that day, and she was afraid. It was a church that she grew up in, and I led her there. See, that's what evangelism does. I mean, God... One time, God showed me this walking his bike with the other two boys. And God said to me, you must
go
home.
I lost you. Oh, there you are. I keep losing you sometimes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's
so
okay.
God said to me, go to that boy. He ran away from home, and tell him he ran away from home and that he needs to go home. And I went and talked to him. I mean, he was a teenager. And I said to him, the Lord told me that he just, I mean, the other two boys, their mouths just dropped. And I said, I want you to go home. I'm praying for you. And he goes, that would be my grandpa. I said,
you're shorting out.
Mom.
That would be your what? I didn't come through. What?
That would,
it would be
my... That would be my grandmother.
Okay.
And he said that that would be my grandmother. So how's that? Is that better?
Better, yes.
Okay, I took you off of speaker.
Okay.
Okay, so he said, that would be my grandmother. I said, he said, I wanted to call my mom today, and I said, go call now and go home. They were stunned that I knew he ran away from home because he's just like a boy walking down the street with two other boys, but he was, you know, on his bike and moving his bike with his feet. So, but it was quite a moment. But these are the kind of things that evangelism does. God will speak to you and tell you who to minister to and what, you know, and to come to. People who refuse, I mean, when I refuse
one. So in other words, an evangelist is somebody that you get messages and you are, how would I say that? It is your job to go. I mean, you're actually helping people that you don't even know.
Yes.
Some people hear that word and they think, oh, she's a Bible thumper. She's a whatever he is. No, that's not true. You know, and that's why I wanted to ask you. So you get the calling and you listen and you go forth. Now, there are evangelist churches, aren't there? There are, you know, that they have them now. Is there other kinds? I mean, some people hear these strange stories and, oh, God, she hears God and all that. Well, I get things come to me, too. Doesn't mean that we're cuckoo,
Yeah, really. I got to say that I am a Bible thumper. I love Jesus. I'm so in love with him.
No, you know what I mean. I'm in the Bible Belt. I'm in the South, for God's sakes. I mean, they, but you know, that's the way it used to be, Darlene. It used to be very much of the Bible, although I have some friends that, they do strange things sometimes, though. I mean, they won't, I don't know if this is true, but I know it's true with them. They won't drink, mixed drinks. They'll only drink wine.
Well, I wouldn't mind having a pina colada once in a while, but I really can't because I have a heart condition that I'm not allowed to.
Right,
but
or a margarita.
Honey,
let's have a margarita.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I grew up drinking wine instead of for, up drinking wine for my meals since I was four.
Of course. From one of the Romance countries. Absolutely. That's what Italians do, too. That's what they did. You always had to have wine and bread and all that kind of stuff. Yes. Matter of fact, there's a man that's here, and he first opened up this Greek place. And we met him, and I mean, he's like a relative. You know, he'll talk to me. He was teaching me a little bit of Greek, and I said, God, it's just so different. He said, no, you'll get it. I just have to keep telling you. And anyways, he adores me. I'll come in, and it's like the queen has walked in, and he's put out the red carpet. and the restaurant, it's got people in it. And sometimes he embarrasses me, but that's how sweet he is. You know, and he gives me a hug. And so, anyways, he makes my Greek salad with chicken special.
Oh, wow.
For me, the way I like it. I like a lot of seasoning. I like the chicken cooked well. And I like a lot of dressing, you know, and he puts a lot of feta cheese.
Yeah.
And you know what
my
granddaughter loves is the flaming cheese. What is that called? What's that called, Darlene?
Flambé.
No, in Greek. It's in a Greek restaurant. It's set on fire.
I don't know. I don't go to very many Greek restaurants. My Greek restaurant's in my kitchen.
I can't remember. And anyway, she likes that. She loves that. Flaming cheese. It's a flaming cheese. They set it on fire.
Wow. What kind of cheese is it?
He can't get it anymore. I don't know. It's some kind of special Greek cheese that he gets, and he said he can't get it now. She hasn't had it in a long time. But I'm treated like a little princess. I want to call myself a princess when I walk in the door, and that's no joke.
Wow.
And, you know, he goes to Greece, and he tells me all about it. you have to go there one day. And I said, oh, yes. And I get on my little horse and I'll go, you know. But he goes there a couple times a year.
You.
Yeah. He said, oh, and you go to the Greek Isles. And he's telling me how beautiful it is. We sit down, and my son was with me, or my husband then, of course, he was with me. And we sit there and listen to the stories. It's beautiful. I hear it's very beautiful. You need to go there. I mean, that's your heritage, right?
Yeah, right. That's my heritage. I've never got to go. My grandmother, my Yaya, is buried there. And they have her, she was an aristocrat. And they have her picture on her grave. But she had, well, 11 kids, 9 that lived before she passed away. She was in her 30s. I think she was 36 when she passed away.
What happened?
I never got to meet her. Nobody knows. Nobody knew what happened to her. My aunt, she was 16 when her mother passed away, and she believes it was from childbirth. She believed, should I say. She's not with us anymore.
You know, stories get lost in translation sometimes, and a lot of times they had children at home, or it was hush-hush. They didn't want anybody to know because it just wasn't good to tell the story. And, you know, people go by sometimes how they're brought up, like, oh, you don't tell those kinds of things. You don't, you just don't do that kind of stuff, you know. So, yeah, it could be,
right.
Who knows. And they had a lot of kids. My grandmother, my mother's mother, she had 10. My mother was the oldest, but she lost one.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? Oh, my gosh.
I never met my
grandfather, who was from Italy, and my grandmother was from Italy. I never met him. He died. My mother was just pregnant with me, and he died.
Are you 100% Italian?
Pardon me?
Are you 100% Italian?
No. I'm part Italian, and I'm Hungarian.
Oh, wow.
What a combo, huh?
Yeah, yes, what a combo.
But I've always had Italian families around me, always, even when I was a little girl. I was taken in, you know, my mother worked. Well, that's another story about my mother and my father. But I always gravitated to them, and I don't know if it was the food or what. They just treated me always like I was one of their own, you know. I was very, very lucky. You know, sometimes. Now, you have brothers and sisters?
I got one sister.
Okay.
And she's got the olive complexion.
Oh, okay.
She's got the dark complexion, and I got the lighter complexion. I'm still darker than normal, but I'm lighter than my sister. My mom was from the north, and my father was from the Athens area, so my father was really dark, olive complexed. And my sister looked like my mom, and she's olive complexion. I look like my dad. And I'm like my mom. It was kind of freaky.
Now, are your parents still here? Are they still here?
No.
Your parents?
No. They're gone. They've been gone for a while. Yeah. My father's gone since 1994. My mother, she's gone since 2001.
Okay. My parents died less than 5 months apart of each other.
Wow.
Yeah.
They must have been very close.
He adored
very,
her.
Very close.
He adored her.
Oh.
Now, she was totally Italian. She was the boss.
She was the boss.
She was the boss. And she worked in an insurance company. You're going to love this. And she was known as the godmother of the insurance world. Like the godfather, but she was the godmother. Because she told
the godmother.
Me. Yeah, she said to me, she said, this is what I tell, because she handled... She gave the jobs out so you could get, you know, the jobs to make money off the insurance jobs. And she told them, if I do this for you, there'll come a time where you're going to have to do something for me. And she meant it. She meant it. And, you know, I got my fencing done. I got my gutters done. You know, they'd come and do it. And I'd say, well, I can't pay for this. Oh, mother took care of it. She didn't. Yeah, she made a phone call is what she did.
Wow.
You see, even back then, that's what it was like. I mean, I always said she could have been a politician. She was ahead of her time.
Wow.
She was tough. She was tough. But anyway, you know, now I have to ask you this. Is there another book coming?
I'm going to start writing in the first week of October. I've got one in my heart.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Yes, I've already got one in my heart, and I have a lot more interviews to do and stuff for this novel, and once I get that done, be the middle of September, I should be able to start writing the first week of October, which I'm really looking forward to.
Isn't that
wonderful?
Because
once I sit down and start writing, yes, it just starts to flow.
Well, you know, my granddaughter and I have a fairy tale, but it's all in my head. Because I'm magical, and I love. You know, it's a fairy tale. It's a love story, but it's beautiful. And for people, she took the first. I have it, some of it written, and she took it to school. I think she was in the ninth grade, just started high school, and they had to read something in front of the class, and she gave it to her teacher, and she said, "Can I read this?" And the teacher kind of glanced to it. She said, "Oh yes. You stand up there and you read this to them." So she read the story, and I don't know that she had a little ending to it, probably of some sort. Everybody clapped. They just loved it. Now you got to remember, these were for young people because they could believe. See, that's how I am. That's what I'm pushing. You and I have seen, okay? There are people listening,
right,
and will listen, that they've never seen anything to prove anything to them. So she's going to do the illustrations for me because she's really good with art. And,
wow.
You know, I started it, you know, I've got it all in my head, but it's for the younger people mostly, but anybody would be able to read it and get something from it because it would show you that to believe in things you cannot see, they really are there.
Yeah,
and that's
yes.
what. If you see me on any Instagram or anywhere, that's what, I post that one too. So you know, now this is not going to be from this book. This is going to be something brand new. Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah, I'm going to start writing something brand new. Well, at least not yet, unless people want me to, and then I will. If I hear that people want it, I'll do it. But right now, I write subjects, so that's why I write literary fiction, because it's character-driven, and it's about things that people are suffering through and how you and I saw that yellow glowing light. That's because
right.
we needed it at the time. God
mm-hmm.
shows people things that they need at the time. And so that's what I've seen other things in my life and
yeah,
gone through other
too.
Things in my life.
Yep.
It's because
I think
we always
will, Darlene. You and I
yes.
and others like us, there will always be something,
well,
you know, that's going to appear for us. You can't ask for it. You can't say, okay, I want to see this. Now, it doesn't work that way. It really doesn't.
Well,
it would be nice.
I think what God does is show you things for what you need
mm-hmm.
at the time
oh, yeah.
of what you need. And so when you see that, then you know it's from God. And then it's like a revelation. And
yep.
then you know to believe for it and it will happen for you. But what I was saying is that I don't really want to write a sequel right now. My granddaughter is saying, write a sequel. Because she thinks that Franklin needs to get married. But I know she wants. She's romantic.
So I think everybody,
we
all have a little bit of romance in us, but especially like her because she's your number one fan.
Yes. Yes, she's my number one fan. My grandson, he's not much of a reader. And so they were here for 10 days in July. And I gave him one of my novels. I said, now it's time for you to read it. And he just to me goes, I will. He went in the bedroom with it before he went to bed. And the next day I saw him. I said, well, did you crack open the book? He goes, yeah, I cracked it open. So I said,
yeah.
Get there? He goes, I promise you, I will read it. So
I promise, Sam. I promise.
Yeah. Well, he's going to in the Marines September 20th, and that's where his head is right now. Yeah, so he's very excited, and he's like he's floating on air right now because his time is coming for the Marines. So.
Wow. My former neighbor was a retired Marine, and, talk about pride. So much pride. So much pride in that man.
Yeah.
You know, they are a unique branch of the armed services. So is the Navy. They're all, I bless them all. I mean, to give of your time in your life when you're young but you're going to get an education at the same time. Now they've really changed things. You will get a really good education from there, whatever you want to go to. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I know. I understand. My son was a Marine. His father. He was a Marine, and my father, my father was in the Army, of course, during World War II. And he was in the South Pacific. That's where he was stationed. And my uncle, one of my uncles, was stationed in Hawaii when it got bombed.
Oh, Pearl Harbor, yeah.
Yes, Pearl Harbor got bombed. And I have, on both sides of the family, Air Force, Army, and Navy, but now Marines. My other son was in the Navy. And I only got two sons, but my other son is in the Navy, and the other one was in the Marines. And my son married a girl in the Navy.
Oh.
So that's where my grandson got it, my granddaughter, because the military family.
I guess so.
Yeah, that's where they
got it. I guess
so.
But that's just totally awesome. Totally awesome.
Isn't that awesome?
You are totally awesome. You know that, don't you?
Thank you.
You are.
Thank you.
You remind me of like this butterfly. You can go to here, you can go to there, you know, it's free flowing. It's easy to talk to you. And I'm so glad you came on my show.
You.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
I'm so glad you invited me because you are easy to talk to. I feel like I've known you all my life.
I know. It's great, isn't it? My son will say, Mom, what do you talk to these people about? I said, I don't know. I read a little synopsis that I get from my admin, and she does something, and she puts a Q&A. He said, you ask questions and get answers? I said, no. I said, it's there. I don't use it. I just read it, and I put it in my head, you know, and, that's it. I don't need to ask. I mean, I'll get out of you what I'm supposed to get out of you for your book, for your career. And so
right.
And that's what I do. So, and I love it. You see, we have found something that we love.
Yeah, well, you got a gift. You definitely got a gift. And because I feel like I've been talking to you all my life.
You know, it's fun, really easy to talk to.
I know.
Yeah, well,
it's
I'm glad.
Beautiful.
That's a very nice compliment coming from you. Because you're probably going to be on a lot of shows and do a lot of these kinds of talks and things like that. And it's, it makes it so nice. It leaves you with this nice feeling and sets you off, you know, and you can, Helen, darling Helen introduced us. Helen Cook.
Yeah, my publicist.
Oh, yes.
I'll tell you.
We call each other sis.
Oh, do you really?
Hey, sis, how are you today?
And
she thanks me. She says, how can I thank you? I can't not seem to thank you enough. You have all of my authors and do them on the show. And I said, but Helen, this is what I do. This is what I love. One of the things I love besides doing my magazine. And I said, when it comes easy. I mean, we're just, as my dad would say, shooting the breeze, just talking away.
Yeah, shooting the breeze.
Learning about each other, and you're awesome. You're just totally awesome. And when your other book comes out, I want you back on. Of course, I'll make sure Helen.
Thank you.
Does that and
yes.
Lots of success to you. You're beautiful. You're just like I said.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you, darling. Thank you. I appreciate it. You were really a lot of fun.
Oh, good. Yes, good. I'm glad that I have, that's my gift. It's not a gift of gab. It's just that the gift to I can talk to anybody. I don't care who they're. I'll talk to the Pope, the President. Doesn't matter. Bring them on. We'll carry on this conversation, you know. And but get me in front of an audience, and I probably couldn't do it, Darlene. I don't think right away. I mean, I had a live audience. I had somebody who's he does talks about, you know, bringing people on. He said, I would bring you on, and I get you talking, and you just take over. And I said, maybe. Motivational speaker. And he said, oh, no, I know. I would, because I can hear you. I can hear your voice. Because you couldn't resist.
Wow.
So, but I love doing what I'm doing. It's good. It's all good.
If you Google Tommy Rowe Sweet Pea, you will see me at 14 years old singing with him.
Oh, I remember Tommy Rowe.
And I still know him. It's really cool. He's very sad right now because he lost his wife last year, and it's very hard for him. But he and I sang together on Santa Monica Beach in California, and all you got to do is, you know, Tommy Rowe Sweet Pea, and he'll come up. The thing is, the problem is, though, I didn't know the camera was on me. If I had known, I would have never been able to do what I did.
Oh, no. You have to do impromptu. You cannot, you know, you can't, because there you'll be a nervous wreck. You'll just be a nervous wreck, that's all. You know,
impromptu.
You know, plan on meeting this famous person. Oh, my God, I'm going to die. But if they don't tell me, and they just take me there, and the person is there, oh, hi, how are you? And I'll start talking, and I'll never shut up. But I love you already. You're wonderful. And
I'm
going to ask Helen for something for the magazine. We've got to keep pushing your beautiful book here for you. And
thank you so much.
Day, dear heart. Oh, you're wonderful. Take care, okay?
Okay, you too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.